Accession number 13358, Mr. H. Wilkinson, reel 12.
Mr. H. Wilkinson, reel 12. In addition to your weapon, Mr. Wilkinson, what else were you given as part of your equipment?
Oh, we issued with telescopic sights, which we didn't have on our ordinary rifles prior to that, to becoming a sniper. And we had binoculars, all of which had to be kept clean.
The sights, how did they fix onto your rifle?
Well, they clipped on in front of the action of the rifle, and they were telescopic, and they were marked with a cross, and they had a range on, and you manipulated that ring until you got the cross exactly central, and you judged by the range, and then you were taught to aim for the head if possible, or otherwise the region of the center of the body, below the chin, more or less the region of the heart. And that was basically it. You made a good shot, champion. Or you knocked him out altogether so that he was unconscious or anything like that.
What was the most...
And you looked for movement after your shot. And you waited for quite a while to see whether he was just mimicking or plain dead.
So patience was an important part.
Oh yes, yes, in every sense, yes. Stealth of movement, time and patience. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you'd moved too quick and he hadn't been hit, he could have turned on you and you would have been the goner, not him. Well, it was known for them to, if they'd heard a shout in their vicinity, a shot in their vicinity, to shout and play dead, and then wait for you making a move. But you had to wait and see. At least I was cautious that way.
Mm-hmm. How many shots could you safely let off in one hide, assuming that you may or may not be spotted?
Well, it depended really entirely upon yourself as to what targets were offered. And if you thought you'd got your main target in the first instance, if all was still for quite a while, you might make a slight movement, very cautiously, to see if there was no answering fire, and then assume that you'd got your target. But you were always very wary. Even returning from maybe your hide, which would probably be in some sort of scrub cover, it wasn't entirely isolated, otherwise it would have been too obvious, but sufficiently far forward just to, for you to make a dash into real dense cover wherever possible.
What was the most effective range you could take to hit someone?
Well, I would say anywhere, really speaking, from 100 to 300 yards I would suggest would be the best. Of course, 100 yards was quite near, really, for a sniper. But it was also a good shot if you got the opportunity to find your target within that range. But, of course, it was quite possible for it to be over 300, providing the countryside was open enough and you could see movement at that distance. But I would say anywhere from, really speaking, from the 100, which was a bit near, but say up to 300.
Was there anything else about the training?
About the training? No, I can't say that I could remember anything much more than that.
Did they tell you that snipers as a specialist may not survive if they were caught because they tended to...
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, that was understood. They didn't really need to be told because it was hinted. And he gathered from that that you're a bit of a loner, whether you wanted to be or not. You were also told that you had to be very wary of tanks or anything in the vicinity. Because if they once got the wire that was a sniper in that area, they would probably search him out. And you don't flipping well move where there was a tank. And if they found you or got a line on you, they'd either fire well into that position and eventually come over and just grind you into the ground with the tracks. So that was the thing you had to be wary of, the clank of armour.
Was personality then an important element in the selection of a sniper, as well as the ability to shoot well?
Well, I don't really know myself. It could have been, quite possibly. But I think the idea was to get a good shot and to mould him to their ways.
How many men are in a sniper section?
No one. I'm trying to look back. A number of men in a sniper section, as far as I can recall and seem to come in contact with myself, the numbers at that time would be this sergeant, I'm not sure whether they called him Sergeant Stewart or Sergeant Petch or Sergeant Stewart Petch, something of that sort. He was MM. Come to think of it, and I believe there was a lance corporal and seven of us, so that was from our company in the Nightingale Woods.
Did you mess separately from the other men?
Oh, we had our own little clique, yes. They were doing all sorts of other training while we were doing the sniper training.
If you went out to do a sniping shot, other than your rifle, how much ammunition would you be carrying?
Oh, we carried 50. Yes, we carried 50 rounds, bandolier, highly polished ammo. And it was put under your belt so it didn't tangle. Or it was moved to the side where it wouldn't tangle, whichever you found convenient to the terrain you were covering.
And the other equipment, packs and so forth, did you go out with any of those around you?
No, we had rations, mainly the chocolate tin, and perhaps a few biscuits stuffed in your pocket or somewhere, as far as I can remember. We didn't carry anything that was cumbersome, that would tangle and hinder you.
Did you paint up your hands and face?
No, I don't think we did at that time. We just had the net on the helmet. And I believe we had a spare piece of that sort of netting we could cover our faces with if it was necessary or we deemed we wanted to. Other than the tin chocolate ration that you kept in your hip pocket. And this piece of netting, and maybe a few biscuits stuffed in your pocket. But you always tried to leave no sign, whatever way you'd been. Whatever you had, you took back with you. Yes.
As a specialist group, did you receive any extra money?
I can't recall that. I mean, under those circumstances, you didn't seem to get paid very much. I think it was just more or less marked down in your book. You got it as and when you got to leave or you got back home or something like that. I think that was one of the times that you were well into credit, because I don't think I ever spent money in France.
Under what circumstances and conditions would you go out to do some sniping? Was it a static situation?
Yes, more or less, yes. It wasn't one where you'd bivvy for the night sort of thing and be up at dawn yourself and moving on. You had to be more or less a static situation, otherwise it wasn't worthwhile going out. You wouldn't have the time to organise and to see what was lying out ahead. I mean, sometimes you were stuck for hours. Sometimes you'd made a shot and you were waiting, and then the circumstances became that you couldn't get back in a hurry. Maybe the battle had moved a bit to one side or the other. So in some instances you were stuck. But fortunately I was never stuck for very long.
Did you go out as ordered by company commanders or...?
Well, I don't know whether the sniper sergeant came under that or whether he was entirely freelance or whether he received hints that there might be something forward. Would he investigate and send somebody out? And he went out as a sniper but not as a... Right.
The rest of your time in Nightingale Wood, at one point you were sealed in.
Yes.
What happened then?
Coming back to Nightingale Woods, I'd gone to visit Major and Mrs. Haynes and family this particular Sunday evening. I should imagine it'd be round about 6 o'clock when I headed up that way. And I was sitting with them perfectly normal, chatting and that to them, when malaria came on, and it came on badly. And they were a bit nonplussed as to what to do. However, as they looked out of the window of the bungalow, they saw one or two of the chaps coming past. So they called them into the house, or into the bungalow, and they more or less half hustled and half carried me back to the camp. And it was to the MO's place, but there was only a corporal on duty there. And he got an ambulance, and I ended up in, I believe it was Shaftesbury Hospital, for 3 weeks. Yes. As it turned out, when I did eventually get back, I'd been posted AWOL. So I'd been AWOL for 3 weeks, according to them. However, it turned out, with me coming out of hospital, that nothing more was done about it. I was present and correct, as you may speak. But I'd gone from Shaftesbury to Taunton Con Depot, and I was in there for about a fortnight, and I was heartily sick of the place. It was more like a damn prison than a con camp. And I know I wasn't clear of malaria, but I was that damn sick. I kept saying, get me the hell out of here, to the MO corporal that used to come round, stick the thermometers in. He says, you can't go yet. He says, you got too much of a temperature. And that was every day and every day. So I thought, now I'm fiddling my bloody way out of this. I'm sick as a polly. Used to get an hour up the town. Well, I didn't find it anything extraordinary, and I was wanting to get back to the unit. I must have been crackers, I don't know. However, I start to fiddle it by breathing cold air in over the thermometer and blowing cold air down over it, and each day for a couple of days. And he said, how are you feeling? I said, fine. I said, get me the hell out of this. He says, well, it's funny. He says, this thermometer doesn't seem too bad. And he says, you look as flushed as could be. Kept feeling me forehead. I said, I'm all right. I said, sign me out of this. So he did. And I got a travel warrant, came by train from Taunton back up to Nursling. And I got into camp there, and there was nobody there except a few Yanks. So I was playing hell with this Yankee sergeant to get back to the unit. I'd been told they were down on the docks on the boats, ready for D-Day. And he says, there's no bloody movement. Bide yourself and keep quiet. So every time I looked near him, he'd look at me, I'd look at him, Duggars. I went with the hell out of it. He says, you're not going, Limey. He says, I'm keeping my bloody eye on you. He says, there's no bloody movement, and that's it. So however, a little while after the last time he'd spoken to me like that, he shouted me over. He says, you'll be bloody pleased, won't you? Catch. And he flung a rifle and the bandolier 50 rounds at me. He says, yes, got to this bloody lot. Got about half a dozen of the lads that we'd been going AWOL. He says, on that jeep, he says, your escort down to the docks. So I went down to the docks and we got off the jeep, lined up. The adjutant came along and he looked at these chaps and he looked at me. He says, what's this then? He says, I seem to recognise you. I came up smartly and said, I'm escort, sir. I've been sent from the Nightingale camp down to here with these chaps. And he said, have you, what's happened to you? I said, I've just come from a hospital. I said, I was in Shaftesbury Hospital for 3 weeks and in Taunton Convalescent Camp for about a fortnight. I said, I'm here. He said, I thought I recognised you somehow. He said, have you seen a doctor? I said, no, I've seen no MO, sir. And he said, well, he says, if you get aboard that craft, across there any point to a certain craft, he says, I'll send the MO along to see you when he gets back. He says, he's just taken the colonel into hospital with malaria. So that was a twist in the tail.
Who was the battalion commander?
Now, I think at that time it was a Green or a Greener. I'm not 100%.
Colonel Green.
Green. That's right then. And it so came about that I never saw any MO. I'd got onto this craft with my rifle and 50 rounds. No small pack, no anything. And I was getting shouted at everywhere I went. I had no seasick tablets or anything. And eventually the convoy set off and we were heading for France. Right.
You were obviously now moving into something very big. What were your personal feelings in that harbour that day?
Well, I hadn't time to have very many feelings before we set off. And I just remember when we chugged along and got out of the Southampton water into the open channel, the number of ships and craft of all sorts, tank craft, troop carriers and what have you, ships of all types, warships, destroyers, ships with barrage balloons on them, it was all en masse. And I could see as we were approaching the coast that we'd be pretty glad to get off our craft. I know I was, because I was getting bullied everywhere I turned by an officer or an NCO because I had no kit, for my rifle, 50 rounds. And I always remember as we were getting pretty close to the French coast, which turned out to be Arromanches, that a Yankee sailor said to me, he says, can you swim much? I says, well, I'll make a pretty good try with the second invasion for me. But I said, I'm always glad when I can get ashore. It just depends on what the tides are like and me being small. He says, well, look, he says, I can swim. He says, I have my life belt. And it was one of these inflatables. And he put it round me and it inflated. So I got off the boat and my little toes were scratching, trying to get forward, and my shoulders were pulling back. Anyway, I managed it ashore. And when I got ashore, my first idea was to get this life belt off. I didn't know how to deflate it or anything. So I was trying to stab it with my bayonet and trying to miss myself, but it made no impression whatsoever. And I crawled forward as past the beach master with his bulldog. I'm getting a bit dry. And on from there, there was these houses in front of the seawall and the houses in front, and went on past there, and I had another go at the life belt and couldn't. So I felt as though my backside was cocked up in the air mile and bullets whistling over it.
Was there a lot of incoming fire?
Well, there seemed to be for a while, yes, and then things quietened out and we seemed to progress to a flatter situation, land, green, not sand as it had been. And I remember that we got more organised, and there was a bit of a copse, and it was night time, it had fallen, and this other fellow and I were detailed to go on outpost. I remember going down this incline in these bushes and trees towards the edge of them and sort of waiting there and listening more or less towards dawn and then making back to the main party. After some breakfast and that, I suppose, we went on. Still pretty flat country, as I can remember, but there became more air activity, particularly with our Spitfires.
Were you with the snipers people now?
We got organised, yes, and went on forward from there. I think I went on two occasions into sniping positions. And I do believe I made a shot or two and came back. And I just forget exactly how, where, or when it was reported that our sergeant had been killed. And I do believe, so the rumour was, that he contradicted part of the training that we were supposed to do. And I think he'd been caught out. But 100% certain I couldn't be, but that was the story that I got. However, my position changed from then. There was an officer who had been wanting me to take a stripe for some time.
Who was this?
I can't recall at the time. Names have gone on so many occasions, Harry, as the years have passed particularly. And he said, "No, Wilkinson," he says, "how are you liking the sniping?" I said, "Well, it was interesting at first, but I said, I'm finding it a bit hairy." He said, "Would you like a stripe?" I says, "Well, I've always put them off for various reasons." He says, "And I've wanted you to have one for some time." He says, "If I got into a position where I could claim you back to take a stripe, would you take it?" I said, "Well," I said, "I think I maybe would give it a shot." So it wasn't long after I was given the stripe.
And where did you go to? Who did you join with your stripe?
Oh, I just rejoined, I think it was Charlie Company again. I believe that's where I came out at again. Yes, I think that was it.
What duties did this stripe bring?
Well, just junior NCO's duties. You know, orders handed down and you were the dog's buddy sort of thing. You relayed them to the rank and file.
This would be a rifle section?
Yes, yes, as previous. Uh-huh. Yes. Of course, sniping took me in good stead when it came to any shooting.
This change happened very quickly after the invasion?
Yes, relatively quickly. I can't put a figures to how many days or so it was, but it was relatively quickly.
What happened next, Mr. Wilkinson?
Well, we'd moved forward and got on to a bit of a sniping or reconnoitering situation. And shortly after that, I'd heard that our sniper sergeant had been killed. Right, from that situation and receiving my stripe, we moved on, and I seem to recall a situation whereby we were static for maybe 2 to maybe 3 days, and in our platoon was a lad called Meyer. It was spelled M-A-H-E-R, and it was a lad from the Channel Islands. And everybody felt sorry for him, Eddie Meyer, because he had glasses like the bottoms of beer bottles. And without them, if he took them off, he was almost totally blind. He'd bump into you or anything. Unfortunately, that poor lad was killed in that very situation. From there, we moved on. I can't quite recall very much of it at all, but I do know that we were situated above Bayeux, and it was highish ground above and to the right of the town in some pretty shrubby hedgerow and wooded sort of country. And the sergeant detailed me to take a party of, I think it was about 4 of us, down into Bayeux for 2 to 3 hours. We had to be back at this certain time. And, of course, obeyed the last order, went down into the town, had a bit of a look around at this old place, and went into the interior of the Bayeux monastery. And we saw for ourselves the Bayeux tapestry. We had a good look round there, and there seemed to be nothing much to do, so we just headed slowly back up, and we were well in time to join the platoon from where we left it. When we got there, everything was deadly silent, and you could sense that there was something had gone wrong. Somehow it seemed unreal. And the sergeant said, "Well, lads, did you enjoy your break?" I said, "Yes." I said, "What's up here?" He says, "Oh," he says, "there's chucks come up." He says, "There's plenty for you." He says, "Nobody's eaten much at all." I said, "Come on." I said, "What's wrong?" I said, "There's something wrong." I said, "I can sense it." He says, "Well, there was a patrol went out, and some of them's never come back, and I think there's 2 who'd come back with horrific wounds, and I think the wounds must have put them off the grub. However, we just had a bare nibble and a drink, and somehow we didn't want to seem to eat. And strangely enough, that was rather unusual for me, because I always believed in to carry on, you needed your strength. To get your strength, you had to eat.
Was this a patrol from your own platoon?
Yes, yes.
So the men that were lost, you knew?
I'd known them, yes.